Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. We just had Yves Mangar, the chairman and chief executive officer of Nestle Middle East, on talking about how to manage your career more effectively. And I want to thank the ICAEW, the Institute of Chartered Accountants of England and Wales, that sponsor our show and allow us to bring you these top executives. Easily, Yves would be ranked top 1% of FMCG executives in the Middle East, North Africa, maybe even Europe, Middle East, and North Africa region. 30 years of experience, and it was really fascinating. Some of his insights was that you're really your worst enemy. That your biggest challenge is going to be managing yourself, is going to be overcoming your limitations that your brain's putting on you. And if you want to hear more about that, go to our website, dubaii1038.com/eyeoncareers, and listen to the podcast. Some real breakthrough concepts that he's working with, that he's really unearthed in the last 30 years of working in senior leadership roles. The best part of the show, it's interactive, so you can SMS us a question at 4001 or use the mobile app to send us any questions you may have. And now we have our closing guest here, Manjeet Singh Chhabra. He is the general manager for Dun & Bradstreet. Let's hear a little bit more about his background.
This is Eye on Careers, Executive CV.
Manjeet Singh Chhabra is the general manager Middle East at Dun & Bradstreet, a U.S. company that sells data. All sorts of data, such as on the credit history of a company, on business-to-business sales and marketing figures, counterparty risk exposure, and much more. The data is being purchased by banks, financial institutions, government departments, multinational corporations, or small to medium-sized businesses. Dun & Bradstreet was founded in New York in 1841. Here in Dubai, the company has its headquarters at the Dubai International Financial Center. In his role as general manager, Manjeet has been a vital component in Dun & Bradstreet's rapid success story in the region, with a strong footprint across the GCC and Levant. If you ask Manjeet about his mantra for innovation, he will answer you, why not? He is true to his belief that maintaining status quo for any business is a perfect recipe for disaster. Manjeet started off his career at Reliance Industries, one of the largest petrochemical companies in the world. He worked there for 5 years managing several projects such as Reliance Petroleum. Manjeet's varied interests include reading, traveling, and playing golf. Manjeet is an alumnus of Mumbai University and holds a Master in Finance Management.
Well, Manjeet, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure, and I think we've been trying to get you on for some time now, so it's great that it finally happened.
Yes, finally, I'm here.
I think it's been like two years, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've been trying to slot it, and finally, I'm glad I'm here.
I have a list of, people that we've tried, and then you basically were like the last person who didn't come on. No, that's not true. There's a few others.
Thanks. That's quite flattering.
So it's great to have you here. I liked what you were saying, that keeping the status quo is the best way for disaster. But at the same time, you have to respect tradition or, kind of the rules of the road. At what point do you know that you need to break free and take on this completely out-of-the-box idea? Isn't there a risk there?
There is, but like the cliche says, no risk, no gain. I think maintaining status quo is a perfect recipe for disaster, like I always say, because world around you is changing so fast. And if you keep doing what you've been doing, you will keep getting what you've been getting. So conventional things will get you conventional results. And if you look at all great people or great companies and how they went on to become who they did in the end, it's because they acted boldly. They dared to do something different or do things differently, and that paid off. So there is always a little bit of experimentation, and sometimes things will not go your way. And this is where you will have to reassess the situation, realign your strategy, and do the course correction.
Now, what you're saying is, in effect, if I could rephrase that, that it's not, if you want to change, what you have is what you have is because of who you are. And if you want something different, you need to change who you are. You know, is that effectively it? That, you know, you actually have to focus on changing yourself more so than changing things around you.
Yes, absolutely. I think one has got to do introspection very regularly just to see if you are, you know, getting the best possible result or not, and recalibrate, because there is always a better way. I believe that there is always a better way and one has got to find it.
So you started out in India and you basically come over here now to the Middle East. What have been some of the key milestones when you look at your personal development? What were they?
Sure. I have very fond memories of the first job back in India, because some of the lessons that I learned very early in my career really helped me big time after I took on the mid-level and senior jobs. So, you know, the environment that I was in Reliance, that demanded the pace, you know, the speed with which we were working. And one of the mantras there was, growth is a way of life. So we used to say, dream big, think big, and time is of essence. You know, whatever you want to achieve, it's not, you know, just wanting to achieve that, but it's being able to achieve that in the shortest possible time. And that defines your success.
What about reality? When you say dream big, and people say, well, let's be realistic about setting goals. You know, how do you manage that? What's the point of dreaming if you're going to be realistic? And how do you manage that? And at the same time, you don't want to have goals that are too lofty, you fall down, or do you?
Yeah. So actually, execution remains the key. Like they say, vision without execution is hallucination. So, you know, whatever you are trying to achieve, if you're not working towards it, there is no substitute for hard work. But it all starts with the dream, you know, you wanting to achieve something. So you should be able to picture what you want to achieve. So that painted picture will give you the drive and your passion will get you there. But remember that hard work is essential. There is absolutely no shortcut.
They had a very interesting study that they did where they took basketball players, and for 1 month, one set of the basketball players practiced shooting hoops and did, you know, their regular practice. And then they had another set who didn't play basketball at all, but they sat in the gym and they meditated and visualized themselves shooting the perfect free throw or shooting the perfect layup. And then when they went back and they retested both groups, the group that actually visualized for 1 month did better than the ones who practiced. To what extent do we need to use our imagination, and should we be visualizing success in business?
Yes, absolutely. It's all in the mind. I think it works wonders. You have to picture yourself achieving the goals that you've set for yourself. And that gets you there, because it's all in the head. A lot of times people see constraints, they see limitations, and that box them down. And sometimes people are looking at, you know, the great goals that they have achieved, and that gives them, you know, the direction. It's first, you know, what you have to achieve. And at that time, you know, one should not worry too much about how you will go on to achieve that. Of course, you will have to learn the ropes, but it will have to start with what is it that you would like to achieve.
I love what Eve, the guest who was on just before you, or what he said when he said, you know, are they stumbling blocks or stepping stones? And so many times we fall into the trap of seeing stumbling blocks rather than a growth opportunity.
Yes, absolutely. I think hurdles will always come along the way. And I always say, either you succeed or you learn. There is no such thing as failure. One has to keep a positive frame of mind and look at every opportunity to learn. Either you will be met with tremendous success and there will be no looking back, or you will learn. And the value of learning should be greater than your loss at that point in time.
What has been the biggest challenge, biggest setback? You know, what was the time when life really hit you and knocked you down and it took everything in you to get back up? What's been your darkest moment?
I've had my learning experiences, Shane. So the technology business that I had co-founded, we could have done a better exit. And one of my learnings from there is to always find a mentor early. Find someone who's done it. So millions of dollars of valuation that we had created over the years just evaporated. And that was very hard hitting, because...
But you lost money?
We did not lose, but we did not get what we deserved, because I have always been working with the idea of creating value. I have been an entrepreneur and an executive. So you always look at what is the value that you're getting created. And that's why I say that starting a business is a lot easier than wanting to sell or wanting to exit. And this is where you need experience. You need someone holding your hand, talking about how to go about it, how to do the agreements, and how to get the best value and make sure that the transition is very smooth.
What was the business, ramp us up? What was the business that you had started and ran, and what was the situation, and where did you leave money on the table?
Sure. So I have also done my little bit of adventure, I say, and it's taking me back to 2003, and it was around the same time of the year, and it was Jitex, and I was also bitten by the IT bug. So I met with someone who was traveling here and who had the idea to open an IT setup here. And we kind of hit it off very well because, I wanted to do something and everything seemed so simple. And when you really want to create something and you're very passionate about it, you will find a way. So it seemed very simple. We looked at what was the minimum share capital required. And we said, hey, we can do it. This doesn't sound a lot. We can manage somehow.
How much was it?
300,000 was the money that was
US
needed to
dollars?
Set up. No, 300,000 dirhams is Good what ones. We had to do. And tremendous learnings again. So, like they say, world is, full of paradox. So, while we say that a lot of great ideas originate in the garage and a lot of brilliant business ideas were first scribbled on the tissue paper. So, we had this drive.
So people don't have garages in Dubai.
Yeah, exactly.
So is that why we're not innovative enough, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's Hewlett-Packard, Disney, Apple, and I think there was one other, and Harley-Davidson all started in a garage, and today they have a combined market cap of $895 billion.
Precisely. So this is what we looked at. And we drew our inspiration from these big brothers, so to speak. And everything worked well there because we just got together. Interesting thing was we were four partners and four from different parts of the world. We had one Danish gentleman, we had one Austrian, we had one Bahraini, and last was me, Indian. And we just had this idea and we said, look, we have all ingredients that are needed to make this business big. We know what we are doing and why not? Let's do it. And there was no looking back from there.
So you quit your job at this point? You quit your job? You didn't have a job then?
No, I had a job at that time. And this was a smooth transition into it.
What were you doing?
Yeah, we were a systems integrator. We were in technology. And we had a decent name in the local marketplace, but our aspirations were truly global.
So this is when you had your job, you were systems integrated, and you quit that?
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So we basically wanted
Who's
to go...
Who's we?
The partners that we in the end decided to do something together.
Oh, so no, I'm asking you. You had a job.
Yes.
You were working where?
I was working here. And
what was the name of the company that you were?
This company was called AGIS, Al-Ghusaibi Information
AGIS.
Systems.
Okay,
so AGIS, AGIS was a systems integrator. We were value-added reseller for an IT company. And we had already reached number one position in a couple of years' time. And the key was really, like they say, getting to the top is easier than staying at the top. So we got there and we realized that unless we expanded...
I'm just confused. So when you left AGS, did you take a team with you? Because you're using
We were a small team of 12 people.
You left all at once to start
this
company.
We merged with a new setup. We created a new company and we hived this business off, really. So this business merged with a newly founded entity. This is how it was done. Because one of the partners, the Bahraini partner that I talked about, he was the sole owner of AGI. So we decided to do a partnership and we decided to found a new company.
This is the
And the new company acquired, exactly. This is I and my partners who did this.
Ah, okay. So it was kind of like institutionalized entrepreneurship or almost what we call the resident entrepreneur. So you were within a kind of a structure. You weren't kind of just sailing the high seas on your own.
You could, yeah. Also, you could look at it as management buyout. Because if you think that the products and technology that you had were not very exciting, you need to bring new partnerships in. So add more exciting, cutting-edge solutions to your portfolio. That's key.
Okay, very, very interesting. So, when you look at that, you jump into this, and at that point, you create a huge value. And the business, how many years did it take till you got to this multi-million dollar valuation?
Yeah, it was 7 years. And 7 years of very successful run, because we won all awards and accolades and multi-million dollar deals, all the names that you can think of.
7 years to success. This is the story of Manjeet Chhabra, the general manager of Dun & Bradstreet, giving you his insights, how to build a company, build a multi-million dollar company, how to sell it, how to run one of the top business information companies in the world. These are the insights that are coming up in just a minute.
Dubai I-103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And for those of you just joining us, we started the show with Yves Mongar, the chairman and chief executive officer of Nestle Middle East. He was talking about the enemy within, how to manage your mind, how to manage yourself, what's the psychology of success. And you can catch his interview on dubaii1038.com/Eye on Careers. And then we also heard from Peter Davos, a entrepreneur and the founder and managing director of Carrion College Advisors. And his company focuses on helping people get U.S. university admissions. And we can talk about, you can listen to his interview about following your passion and finding value in what you do, again, on our website, dubaii1038.com/Eye on Careers, and check out the podcast. But right now we're with Manjeet Chhabra, who was just telling us how he lost millions when he sold his company, not having a mentor. A really key takeaway there was finding a mentor, that growth is a way of life, that you need to think big, you need to dream big, you need to visualize success, and always surround yourself with people who have more experience than you do. But Manjeet, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
So when, you know, now you're, how big is Dun & Bradstreet in the Middle East? I mean, how big is the team?
We are about 110 strong in the UAE.
And what do you look for when you're hiring someone?
For most jobs, we look for soft skills. We look at the cultural fit. We look at the attitude, because hard skills are easier to acquire. We look at the skill well metrics.
How do you do cultural fit in the Middle East, where, you know, at any company, there's 55, 60 cultures there?
Yeah. So what it means is every organization has a unique and distinct culture. And when you're hiring, you have to really see whether that person would fit. It's not to suggest the nationality or ethnicity, but the value system, the core value system. So you cannot change the core of a person. That person has to gel with the rest of the organization, has to stand up for the same values, live those values through work. And those are the things that we are very particular about.
Okay, so you test for the soft skills. What are some of the key traits that you think, when you look at someone, you say, these, you know, if they have these traits, they're going to be successful?
Yeah, creativity, innovation, being able to think out of the box, and being able to work hard, because we always work with deadlines. All businesses are more demanding now. Clients want more and more for less and less, and in shortest possible time. And there are always going to be some challenges associated with every job. And the person should not buckle down under pressure, but rise to the occasion, learn from it, move on, realign, do something better to the, you know, the process. So leaving a legacy behind.
One of the interview questions I had was, do you believe in aliens? And do you think aliens have been on Earth before? And this is one of the ways to test for creativity. I mean, how do you test for creativity? Because that's a tough one to test for, isn't it?
Absolutely. So we can ask some abstract questions. So, for example, I remember in one of the interviews I had asked the applicant, I asked, just imagine you wake up middle of the night because your phone is ringing. And what is worse, you answer the phone and in the earpiece you hear the squealing sound of the fax machine. So you know that this is a fax machine dialing your number, and you also know the fax machine will keep dialing it every 5 minutes.
If one thing you're going to hear squealing in the middle of the night, the fax machine will probably be the best thing that you can hear if you had to pick something squealing.
You bet.
But
Yeah. So the idea here is to really see how the person responds to questions like this, because most instinctive answer from most of the people is going to be, I'll put the phone in silent and go back to sleep. But that's not the best answer, because what if you were going to get an important phone call? And that's the reason you had put the ringer on in the first place. So this is not really the best answer. You have to really think of something better.
What's the best answer for that?
The best answer is really, just imagine you had a fax machine in the office. If you could forward your line to the office fax number, or if you had a fax machine at home, better still, forward it to the fax machine, because you know that within the next couple of minutes, the number is going to be dialed again. You receive the fax, or at least the caller will go silent with that, and then you can go back to your sleep peacefully.
Okay. So it's creativity. What was the other ones?
Yep. Out of the box thinking or innovation.
Innovation. Okay.
And hard work.
Hard work. How do you test for hard work?
Yeah. I think in the interview, we ask things like, any evidence of the person working around the clock, or if they had to meet a very aggressive timeline, how they went on to achieve that deadline.
Right. When you're basically managing 110 people, what kind of toolkit do you use to make sure that group is firing in and moving in the right direction?
Setting the right performance metrics is key, because if we can't measure, we can't manage it. So everyone has objectives that are clearly defined. Everyone in the company has objectives, and this includes client service people. Of course, the sales people is the easiest one to measure, but everyone has clearly defined objectives, and we have to ensure that they stick to the goals that they have set. So you have the long-term goals and you have the short-term goals, and there has to be a feedback midterm just to see if everything is going as planned or something needs to change.
So do you have to set up an internal audit function to, manage these KPIs and, the amount of time that you take to be organized, to set the goals, then monitor the goals, and then review the goals, and then meet about the goals? That's a huge amount of time investment.
Yeah, but you have to set it once. You have to set it once for a position. And that position may be held by several people. So if you're talking about, for example, a client service representative, you know what is important, what is expected of a good client service representative. You know what clients expect. So you define those measures, things that you have to measure, and then apply that to people according to their seniority. So maybe there are people who are supposed to deliver one notch up results because of their experience, and there are people who are very new. So the parameters remain the same, but what is it that should be the end output? That can vary according to the experience and seniority.
Right. Do you think if we're going to drive peak performance in an organization that we need to be quick to fire people?
Our approach is a little different. We actually believe in coaching. We do not believe in quickly firing people, because we've seen many people turning around and delivering best results. So I can think of so many cases where year one, the performance was really very bad.
For an entire year?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was the person or people
whole year
who we have in. Yeah.
Oh my
so
God.
Basically, we see the trend. We see the effort. We also see what is holding the person back. Is it some kind of training that is needed? A little bit of coaching and mentoring? And if you do that and you invest time and effort in grooming that individual, bringing him up, I think you command all the loyalty from him, and the person goes on to contribute in a big way.
Really? Yeah. There's another theory that says, generally the person who's going to be coaching him is a top performer, right? So now it's like a wounded man on the battlefield. So you have one person who's not performing, and now you're going to take your most productive, best person and make him teach this person who's not performing. So now you have two people who are not performing.
Yeah. So when you say that a person is assigned a mentor, that does not mean that for mentor, it is a full-time job. It is just being there, just playing that friend, philosopher, guide role, guiding at the right moment without taking eyes off the ball. And this again works because the person can also relate to it, that when he or she would have come on board, would have been very, very new, maybe would have felt some challenges and experiences that the person goes on to overcome and how he overcame. So the idea is not to expect everyone to reinvent. So system, can get educated in itself, And this knowledge can be imparted by somebody who's more senior in the organization.
When you look at your team and their peak performance, you know, their best moment, how close do you think they've ever come, the closest that they've ever come to really reaching what they're truly capable of?
A lot of people actually do not rest until they're realizing their full potential. They just need to know what their true potential is. And they have this, you know, innate passion and drive to keep doing better and better. And that's why it's important that we set a very high bar. So every time something is achieved, we don't sit on our laurels. We don't say, okay, job done. This is the best possible way. We see, is there a better way? And like I had mentioned earlier, there is always a better way. So you actually raise the bar and again try to outdo yourself.
But on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being, you know, this is, I can't do better than this, how close do you come to actually hitting that? Or
I think the limitation is in our head. Because, like I said, there is always a better way. You will never get to the point where you say, this is it, I'm done, there is no way I can do better than this.
Right. So basically, we're just scraping the surface of what we're capable of.
Exactly. I think all of us are much more capable of, you know, doing things than what we are right now.
What do you say, you know, when you look at leadership, what's the number one thing that they're lacking in terms of not reaching that peak performance moment?
Yeah, I think the big picture is very, very important. Long-term play is important. And for any senior leader, his or her performance is measured through success of his team. If his team is delivering, he has delivered. He has realized his goals. So his focus is really on building the right organization, equipping them, empowering them, removing hurdles from their way, giving them the necessary clarity so they can go on to achieve their individual goals. And if they are successful, the leader is automatically successful. So his success is through his people's success.
This is Manjeet Singh Chhabra, the general manager of Dun & Bradstreet, sharing his lessons learned on the road to the top.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. We are here with Manjeet Singh Chhabra, the general manager of Dun & Bradstreet. Manjeet, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
So we were just chatting on the break about leadership and does a leader have to be a good follower?
I think so. Yes, a good leader has to be a good follower because he has to lead by example. And if he is not able to listen well to people and lacks the humility, it's very difficult for him to command respect of others. There are people who would like to be feared, and there are these leaders who are feared, and there are leaders who are respected and looked up to.
Yeah, it's interesting when you play with this concept of humility, because in kind of business lore, contemporary business lore, the humble leader, the leader of servitude, and all of this stuff is continually printed off the publisher's shelf. But there was a study done by Korn Ferry International where they looked at 10,000 executives who were in the top 1% of their earning bracket. And it came back that the actual facts was asymmetrical to what the academics and pundits of leadership were actually printing, in that these people were not humble. They came to the table with, you know, maybe even a little bit of an edge on them, saying, you know, I'm the best at this, I'm going to drive this over the hill. And then almost when you look at history, you know, like we were talking Genghis Khan, not too humble of a guy. You know, most of the massive leaders, Hitler, definitely not a humble guy. You know, maybe not the most popular example, but he almost took control of the world. Yeah, there's so many of them, and it's actually hard to find. You know, I guess you have the Dalai Lama or something like this. You have a few of them, but it almost seems like the non-humble leaders are outnumbering the humble ones.
That's history again, Shane. And like I mentioned, future need not be exactly like history. That can be different. And everybody can have a different style, but in the corporate world, we've got to be result-oriented. If a leader is result-oriented, the style will not matter as much, because you can be very aggressive, thumping the table kinds, or you can be soft and subtle, but still pointing to the person what's got to be done and where he or she is falling short. And at the same time, self-confidence is a fantastic thing. Self-esteem is great. This is a prerequisite for success, but not necessarily arrogance.
Right, not arrogance. I could agree with that. So what do you think are some of the biggest mistakes people make when they're managing their careers?
They do not act boldly. A lot of people play it safe, too safe. Especially when people start their career, they have to be willing to experiment a little bit and see where their passion is ignited. Unless they try, they may have wrong notions about their own likings and passion. There are very few people who are very clear about what they want to do from early on. It's only after they have seen a few things, they've tried a few things that they see, that they can see for themselves what is it that they enjoy the most and where they are most successful. So they have to be willing to experiment a little bit, especially early on in their career, and act boldly. Because what will happen? They have to imagine, let's say you have made a decision and that decision did not give you the desired results or expected results. Fine, this is not end of life. Learn from it and move on. At least you know what will not work.
Right. I like the quote where it says, failure is not final.
Yeah.
I can't remember it.
It was exactly.
Victory is not final. Failure is not fatal. It's the courage to carry on that counts.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more with that.
I think that was Sir Winston Churchill who said that,
sure.
I think, yep. You know.
Yeah. Like, well mean, said, but I subscribe to the same philosophy that we are all, as business, as individuals, always work in progress.
So you see it
nothing
as a growth,
is final.
A growth mode.
Absolutely, because we keep evolving. So we learn from our own experiences and we should not really shut ourselves off from the new experiences and deprive ourselves of something that we could have tried. And at least if you try, you will know whether you succeed in that or not. If you're not, then you learn from it and you know what not to do, which is just as important as knowing what to do.
Sometimes you need to know what you're not before you know what you are. And what you were saying, I think, also is talking about the focus that, you know, you've been focused in IT and you didn't really stray out of that. That's really been your strength. You know, do you feel that that's one of the issues that people today may kind of flip-flop across industries, and at the end of the, you know, at 10 or 15 years, they have a smorgasbord of experience that's not really going to be competitive?
I think the trend is changing. There was a time when there was a lot of talk about the specialization, that this person is a retail king. This person knows lean manufacturing, or this person is from financial services, and you get stamped with your industry. The new trend is a lot of boards, they want people to come on board with fresh pair of eyes. So you could have a basic skill, which is to build a team, to manage a business, to learn the landscape, to introduce the new products. And there, what that product is could be incidental. And this is where we are going. Even we have seen that some of the people who came without any relevant experience actually went on to become some of the best people we have.
Right. What would your advice be to, you know, people who are just starting out early career, who are just looking at those entry-level jobs?
Yeah. Focus is key. So when they have taken a job, they have to give more than 100%. There was a time when we were saying that we need 100%. Nowadays, you have to be involved. You have to take initiatives. So if you do something that you're asked to do or you're told to do, there is no fun in that. If you take initiative and you do something that you think has got to be done, even if you are not expected to do it at that point in time, this will determine your success and will take you places.
What is your advice for someone who would be mid-career, who's, you know, maybe between 5 to 10 years experience?
Yeah. So at mid-career, again, you've had some learning because initially you're trying to absorb everything, you're trying to observe everything. At mid-level, you typically know what you're lacking, what skills you need to hone, how you can climb up the ladder very, very quickly. Because this is when you can cover the gap very quickly. A lot of people retire at mid-level and some people break through to the top jobs. And this is because sense of urgency that's demonstrated by them and the skills that they acquire when they are in the middle of the career, not necessarily that they were born with.
Do you think that people, if they're going to go develop their skill sets, should they close off any weaknesses or should they focus on further developing their strengths?
I think they should maximize their strengths because there is no perfect human being. Some weaknesses are always going to be there. Rather than focusing on the weakness, they should maximize the strengths, know how to get maximum from the strengths that they have. Another point that we have is about hiring people who address one of your own weaknesses. We actually are very particular about it, where a manager, when he is hiring a team member for himself, has to actually be clear about how this person will address one of the weaknesses that the manager has. We also have this concept of MESI, mutually exclusive and collectively exhaustive skill set, where everybody can come with a different skill, can bring different thing to the table. So collectively as a team, as an organization, you have all skills that are needed, but you are not necessarily expecting all individuals to have all the skills.
What is your advice then to those individuals who are in senior jobs, the GMs, MDs, CEOs of this world?
They have to have a balanced view. They have to have short-term goals, but at the same time have a little longer term. There was a time when long-term plan would mean 10 years or 5 years, but these days I think 5 years would suffice because world around us changes so much. They need to have that clarity, have pretty much the painted picture. So if we are in 2014 now, every organization must have 2020 or 2019 plan. And this plan is something that's shared with the organization. This is literally hanging on the walls inside the office where everyone knows this is what we're working towards. And these should be measurable goals rather than something vague, which says being in the leadership position. If you can put some measurable things, and same thing you can take to your personal goals as well. If it's not measurable, it's going to be very hard for you to focus on it and achieve.
So keep it measurable. I liked your saying at the beginning of the show, where you said growth is a way of life. Think big, dream big, visualize success. Make sure you get a mentor. It's the status quo is, what was it? The fastest way to have a disaster?
Perfect recipe for disaster, yeah.
Perfect recipe for disaster. So you constantly have to get rid of that status quo. Yeah.
Keep reinventing.
And interestingly, you don't want to fire people either. So,
yeah. So eventually you will, but you should not give up on people very early, because a lot of people say, okay, this is the person, this is what he's capable of, this is what he's not capable of. But like I said, given the right attitude, a person can acquire any skill set and rise to the occasion. You have to keep faith. And more than anything, have faith in your own ability to hire the right people.
Dubai i103.8, content that keeps you listening. Stay one step ahead.